Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to the midweek version of the Fiber Talk podcast for needlework artists. And yes, you can tell by my voice, I'm not getting healthier. I'm hanging in there, but no, I'm not getting better. Giving it a few more days and then we'll go into panic mode. But yes, my voice is wrecked for weeks. So I have to start out on a sad note because we learned we're recording this Tuesday, and we learned that Barb Adams of Blackbird Designs has passed away. So really sad. You know, Barb and Alma Allen, two real forces in the design world, and Barb has left us. And if you go to Instagram, at Blackbird Alma, Alma Allen put up a real nice piece about Barb and what she meant to her in her passing. And that's the best way to really appreciate who Barb was and what she did. And so sad thing there from, you know, a duo that has produced so much good stuff through the years.
I just think that there was a time when, you know, cross stitch wasn't as popular, and that their designs, you know, have, you know, kind of were always there for people to stitch. They were there
through thick and thin, ups and downs. Right. Yep. Well, and you go to the Nashville market and their room, you know, people lined up to get in. I mean, that's a busy room, popular, very popular.
Right.
And if you own any of their books, you know what I mean. They're really, really nice designs. And of course their rooms, I mean, their setups in their rooms are just gorgeous.
And
so sad to have that happen. We all get to leave sooner or later, but still it hurts. So that's sad. And if you knew her personally, I'm sure that, you're hurting more than most of us. So, prayers to her family. And
yes.
Alma, yes. All right, tonight, this is a Wednesday show, so tonight, we're going, Beth and I, Stitch and Chat, and Carrie Noss is going to join us for about a half hour. And then next week, Carrie is going to do her needle lace demonstration. So Carrie will be with us tonight, and she will give you the information that you need if you want to do the stitching along with her next Wednesday. And I'll have a panel up on the screen with the list of materials that you need. So it's not a huge thing. You can get them right out of your stash. Most people have it in stash. But I'll have a list so you can write them down and gather your stuff so that next Wednesday when Carrie does the demonstration, then you can follow along and get a little practice time in. So she will be with us, and then Beth and I are just going to yak for a while. And if all goes well, I'll actually have a frame with some kind of stitching set up.
Woohoo!
Think about that.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. If all goes well. I'm going to try.
It'll be good.
Even if it's my banding project, if I have to haul that out and just put it on a hoop, I think I'll at least get something. So, yeah, so that's tomorrow night. And then Sunday, we haven't recorded this one yet. I'm really excited about it. Ekta Call from the UK does some of the most amazing embroidery. It's all maps. Her whole thing is maps. And you follow her more than I do.
Right. And she just, they're just, you know, she does cities and countries. They're just fascinating. I'm really excited about that. You're recording that show. That's going to be, she's a fascinating lady.
Yeah. Very, you know, unique design approach, unique, product or designs that she puts out. And of course, behind that is a whole lot of talent and education and skill and experience. So, that'll be Sunday. Looking forward to that. That'll be a good one. Let's see. And we still have the usual stitch along things going on. You can get involved if you want. Marion Lang, Mary Jane Fry, Botany Bay Sampler, Spring Hills Stitch Along, and Take Wing, Joanna Kavanaugh's Take Wing, All those available, Sassy Jacks, the Spring Hill available from Needle and Haystack.
Needle and Haystack.
I only have half my nerves firing tonight. So anyway, all those things, links are all over the place, so they're not too hard to find. And either Kathy or
Kim
can help you get kits if you want to join us. We're not any of us far along on any of them, so it's no threat to catch up.
No, no. And you can beat Gary on Spring Hill if you put a few stitches in. So.
Yep, 10. I think 10 stitches, you're ahead of me. Yep, guaranteed.
Yep. Yep.
So, okay, so you started this problem with the painted canvas thing. Yes. No, you can't back out of this. No, you started the painted canvas problem.
This is true.
Don't even try. Yeah, you don't even try to get out of it because it's all on you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll own it.
All right. So we talked about this last week. Jane Wood of the Chili Hollow Needlepoint Adventure blog. Now, if you follow any blogs anywhere in the needlework world, if Chili Hollow Needlepoint Adventure is the one, and you say, well, that's Needlepoint, I don't do Needlepoint, follow it. She has links to everything. That is one of the most thorough blogs and one of the longest standing blogs in the whole hobby, and she keeps it up, and there's so many resources in that thing. You know, go follow that and read what she has. I keep up with it all the time because really good. So Jane raised her hand after last week's show and said she would help us do painted canvas.
Which is great.
Right.
Because we need help.
Yes. So, and I've not communicated with her other than to say, I think I told her she's in or she's on or whatever. But anyway, so we're going to drag her into this and get some help doing this. And so we've both chosen canvases. So what is your canvas?
Mine is one, I don't know if it has a name, but it has a snake, a gecko, and then a bearded dragon, I think is, or a horny frog. Yeah, something like that. So it's lizards, and it's very Southwest, very, very Southwest.
Yes. Has that classic Southwest border around it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how big is yours?
My colors. Mine is, my canvas size is 15 by 15.
Ooh, that's bigger than I thought it was.
It is. It's, I have Evertights the right size. That's what's amazing.
Look
with
at
nothing
you.
On them.
Look at you. Yeah. So it's the Southwest border and then these three animals viewed from the top and they're all striped and they're solid spaces. And then in between them is just open canvas.
Correct.
So see, my first thing when I look at that is, okay, the first decision to me is what are you going to do with the open canvas?
And I was looking at it just by color. I pulled out a color wheel and I said, okay, so what are the colors in this piece? And they're pretty analogous. They're all on one side of the wheel. So it looks like if I put like a very, very light yellow or a gold, I might even go with a gray because there's black in the border, but some sort of open stitch and, you know, just very, very open, very, very light.
Okay.
To go through that. And of course, I've never done that where, you know, you've got this huge background area and then you've got the pieces laying in there. And I know there's a trick for that where you pull your thread across so you don't lose your pattern because your eye needs to follow that continuously across. Because if it gets off, your eye will see it.
Right. The old compensation problem. Yes.
Yes. Yes. So I don't know how to do that. I know there's a trick for that. So I'm hoping Jane will know. I'm sure she does.
The only thing I know about compensation is when you have to compensate around other color spaces is people say to basically stitch the full stitch and then that will show you where the partial stitch ends.
Right.
That's all I know. So, yeah, you have
That's
an
how.
interesting challenge because you like the lizard and the bearded dragon have feet.
Right.
Yeah, good luck.
Well, I think it'll be all right. I think your eye will compensate if you miss a stitch, or you just put like a half stitch in there. I think that'll be all right. Or if you do the full stitch and then cover it with something else. So like, because
Oh,
it's just over one thread, on one canvas thread, the little fingers of these animals. So if you just stitched over it with a darker color, it would just raise a little bit.
Yeah, which might be a good thing in general.
Right. And I
Yeah.
was thinking of just doing an intent stitch anyway, to because they're, the feet are touching the surface, so they're lower than the body.
Yeah.
So that tent stitch would kind of, I was thinking, would kind of make it look like it's in the more in the background than in the foreground.
Right.
And that's as far as I've gotten.
Well, and if you're stitching over something, then yeah, that would give those like the relief from the background that you would want. So,
Right.
yeah, that's good. Now, the other thing, and this is where I start to have trouble with painted canvases, is the bearded dragon has spots on it.
Okay, right.
So then, to me, a decision needs to be made. Do you execute all those spots? Do you?
I think what I would do, this is, I did guess I did think about this. I thought if I want, because the bearded dragon, they're bumpy. They're kind of bumpy looking, so that should be a very textured stitch. Whatever I use, I will probably end up covering those red dots. And then I'll probably take a photo of a close up of that area and then go back with either beads or French knots and kind of try to imitate where they were.
Oh, okay. 'Cause they
Yeah,
can be
I'm not.
random. Yeah.
Right. And I might even put fewer in than there are on there. There seems like there's an awful lot of them.
It's pretty busy. Yeah.
But fewer and shiny. Especially if I put a bead on there, that might look really cool.
Yeah, and I'll see a bead. Yeah, there's your relief again.
Right,
Yeah.
right. So it would raise it up higher. And then the snake has like little diamond shapes on it. And I keep thinking road stitches on that.
Yep. To me, that was automatic. Yeah.
But then what to put between? Maybe a Hungarian?
Yeah, it could
Something
be.
diamond shaped also.
Yeah. To carry the shape, but not the raised.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. See, you're already halfway there in terms of doing this.
Okay, but the question is, I think what the other one thing that has stopped me on this is the gecko. I never liked all those. It's just too busy. He's got all these little stripes on him, different colors, and I didn't want to stitch him that way.
Yeah.
And I didn't know I didn't have to at the time when I bought him. I even thought, oh, I have to repaint him or something. Well, no, I just have to use something that's dark enough to cover it.
Yeah. 'Cause yeah,
I
he's
don't.
pretty stripey. I'd almost think you'd almost think about going half the stripes.
Right. And even and cutting back on the colors because it's too busy. He's too busy to me.
Yeah.
So there's the red lines, maybe keep the red lines and then use a variegated thread and let that work for me. Oh, why are we not writing this down while we're talking?
Well, we're recording it, see? So,
Oh, okay, so I don't have
yeah.
to write it down.
And
Sucked
if
away.
fo folks who are listening, if you're having trouble visualizing, obviously I'll put pictures of both of our canvases on the podcast page at wetalkfiber.com. And in the video, they'll be the first ones in the video, YouTube, and then on the Instagram post. So you'll be able to see them. But yeah, should be able to visualize what we're talking about. So that's okay. So you're pretty well along then. It's just a matter of stitches and threads then.
Right. And right. It's just a matter of just getting started. And do you start with the background? Or do you start with
Don't
the
know.
fore? I mean, I don't know. That's what we need to know. I need
Right.
to know. Do you start with that background? I think there's an order. that you stitch in.
Yeah, there are some tricks to that to make sure that the stuff you want to come to the foreground sticks out. But I think the background, you just do, I mean, I do the background. You got so much background, I do it as I went. I wouldn't wait.
Right. Yeah. Because then it wouldn't get done.
Right.
And I think it needs to be done. It's not like I could just leave that. I don't mind blank canvas. Some people don't like it, but I don't like blank canvas.
Yeah, it needs to, well, this needs to have something. Like you said, a really contrasting, like right. a really light yellow would bring some real life to it. Because the border's pretty heavy and dark.
Right, right. And I think, I wonder even, depending on what I pull for the rest of the things, if I pulled like a very thin cry neck that was a little sparkly. I don't know. I have to, I'd have to start pulling. I don't want to be too, because it's a background though. So maybe not. Change my mind.
Okay.
I'm thinking of super, super, like something that's white. Almost white that looks has just a hint of yellow in it.
Uh-huh. Okay, see now we've reached Jane Wood territory.
Yes.
So okay, I'm thinking we need to get Jane involved, and then you and I need to have maybe a special show where we talk about it, what we're doing.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's an interesting adventure. Because see, this is the thing, you know, this is what we're doing here that I want to do. I don't want to buy a stitch guide. See, I don't want to do that. I want to figure it out on my own and learn from that experience and, you know, succeed or fail, but I want it to be what I came up with, not what somebody else did, because then I could just buy a kit. So, I want to do it. Yeah. This way. Like, I mean, if you and I collaborate or you collaborate with other people with Jane, that's one thing, but still, I don't want here's a stitch guide, go execute it. Yuck. I don't want to do that.
Right.
I shouldn't say yuck. You know, that's what a lot of people enjoy that. That wasn't fair at all. But that's just not that's not the learning experience I want out of this. I want the experience of determining these things on my own.
Right. And there have been canvases that I've looked at, very beautiful. I think Liz from Tapestry Tent, some of those stockings, Christmas stockings. And I've looked at them for years. And I thought, they're just too overwhelming. You know, you spend so much money on them. I would be afraid of making a mistake. This one, you know, I think now that we've, you know, just talking through the little bit we've talked through, I'm thinking, yeah, I think I could start this one. And I think that's what I'd like to be able to get up to, is to be at a level where you could say, take one of these very, very, that, you know, you could almost frame them basically because they're so well painted and say, yeah, I know what stitches would enhance this canvas.
Yes.
And I think that's what you're interested in doing.
It's exactly right.
I mean, there are some great people who do stitch guides, and I've seen people execute them, and their stitching is beautiful, and they've done beautiful jobs on them. And I understand wanting to do that because it is scary. You spend so much money on a canvas, you'd hate to ruin it. But it's like, okay, this is like, I can do this, and I have the threads.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, that's established. Yeah, and I should be careful too about stitch guides. There's nothing wrong with them. I mean, they're useful and good, and they help a lot of people. It's just not the learning experience I want out of it, and so I need to be careful the way I phrase that, because I know stitch guides are very popular and people get a lot of enjoyment out of them. So I don't have a problem with them, and probably that's what we both should be doing is stitch guides on these. But I just don't want that experience. So.
Right. So let's talk about yours a little bit, because I keep on looking at the leaves. What is this called? It's got the three birds on it.
It's a laurel birch. It's a laurel birch design, and I love those designs. When it comes to painted canvas, if you had me choose, I would go to the laurel birch, the Donji line, and this is rainbow. What is it?
Rainbow birds,
laurel birch. And she has this one, and then the one I really want to do is the horses. There are three horses, and I've seen that done more than once, and they're just gorgeous. But this is three birds, not unlike the three horses. And I got it because someone had passed away at the Fox chapter, and we had one of those meetings where you take whatever you want from the stash, and then you give a contribution to the memorial fund. And I saw this, and I latched onto it right away because that those Laurel Birch ones really, of all the painted canvases, speak to me. So I grabbed this one and just threw it in a drawer, but I was not going to pass up an opportunity to get, it's 10 by 12, to get this canvas for what I contributed for a whole lot of stuff to the memorial fund. And so I've just kept it, and then when you brought this thing, this crazy idea up, that's, my mind went right to that. It was a matter of finding it in the, now packed away and stored away stuff. But yeah, it's, so it's three like parrots, stylized parrots, overlapping. And then yes, the leaves seem to me like there's a lot of fun to be, I'm with you. A lot of fun to be had with the leaves, tropical leaves.
Right. And there's, there's, I think it's called by Painter's Thread. They have like a GIMP. So like you can't get memory wire from DMC. I think they got rid of it. Prynek might have something, but I was just thinking, just for the stems of those, because they come in a wide variety of colors, and couching that down to give that a raised look was my first thought on those.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. That could work.
And then you've got all that hair on the birds. Are their little crescent thing.
Right. And see, this this is the interesting thing for me. And this is where another area where I have trouble with painted canvas. Because I always remember I was in a shop once and the subject of painted canvas came up. And the lady who was in the conversation said, I don't get why people do the painted canvas, because she said the art has already been done. So what are you doing? Well, you can make that argument, but then when you look at people who really know what to do with a painted canvas, you can say, well, here's why you do it.
Right.
Because they'd make them come alive. But the interesting thing is these birds have, and one of the things that attracts me to this is there are large color areas, but the color areas are shaded. And right. So the first brick wall I run into is, okay, I'd like to keep that shading, but I have large areas so I can do interesting stitches that aren't basket weave. So then how do I achieve that? How do I keep that shading and still do whatever stitch? Doesn't matter what the stitch is, and keep that shading. So that's one of the brick walls I run into. Is just that, because it seems to me that if I just take that and pick one of the colors in that area and stitch it all that way, that I've lost something.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's where you're going to have to really work with threads. And I'm almost guessing if you really want it to be very well shaded, you're going to have to work with silk, because silk has, you can get a huge color range in the silks.
To get the subtleties.
And DMC does too. But if you want something a little shiny, you know, looking at the faces, we were talking a little bit before that the middle bird, it's got some shading around it. And you really don't want to lose that, because it gives it that depth in its face. So, but you can get a large color range. And then also if you used something that was a little variegated within the thread line. And I'm not talking something that's got huge color blocks. I'm talking something that's very subtly shaded across the thread. So it's all it's all red, but a little section's a little bit darker and a little section's a little lighter. Then you're going to be able to get a little movement. And then you choose another color that's a shade of red that's one lighter, or you know, or the blues or the purples, whatever you're using, then you'd get a little bit more movement in that area, no matter what stitch you used.
Yeah. But see, yeah, it's got to be there. You got to keep the shading as much as you can.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And the three big orange beaks are shaded, and you got to keep that.
Right. Because if not, they'll look flat.
Right. Right.
And that's what you're trying to avoid.
Right. So this, yeah, so now we're right up against Jane Wood here.
Yes.
Help.
Yes.
And then see that then interesting also talk about open area around the leaves. There's leaves on the left, the tropical frond type leaves. There's open white canvas background. Now see to me that yeah, I don't want it open. I want to put something in there, but to me it's going to be something an open stitch and maybe just a hint of green to suggest the reflecting light off of green leaves everywhere.
Right, right.
But just enough, right. Yeah.
Right. And but it can't be too big of an open stitch because you don't have very many threads
no,
to work.
I know, exactly.
So if you did something like, what's it called? It's not, it's like a slant, some sort of slanted tent stitch thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't do every one. You like do every other one. I don't know. It's got a name.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it's called. Alyssa stitch? No, that's not it. Anyway, but that might work because mm-hmm. it's very subtle. But it would just give you enough to get some color back there.
Right. Right. And see, and this design also has, and you talk about slanted, this design, all of the lines flow from lower left to upper right.
Oh.
Everything is the diagonal.
Right.
So it says to me that the stitches I choose have to be carefully chosen to maintain that. Because
yes.
if I break from that, anything that breaks from that is going to stand out and it's not going to look good.
Well, except you've got the curves of the top of their heads. So those are going more horizontal.
Yeah.
They're cutting across those lines.
Right. And you want those two, but everything right. else has to slant.
Yes. Yes.
Because see, even their beaks keep the slant.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, the heads have to break with that or the birds wouldn't stand out. Yes. But so that's the other thing that is in my head is I'm immediately constrained in the stitches I choose to keep those lines flowing bottom left to upper right.
Right. Would you do anything dimensional? Like I'm thinking of those crests.
I would kill to do something dimensional. Yes.
I keep on thinking of that straw thread, silk straw.
Mm-hmm.
Jane, think of some stitches with that silk straw up
yeah.
there. That might work.
It could. Yes. No, if it can be dimensional, I want to do it. Yeah. Yeah. That's where we're at. That's where we're at. Okay. I'll be in touch, Jane. We need your help.
Definitely.
I'll be sending pictures and I'll be in touch. Okay. So that's where we're at. Another adventure.
Because we don't have anything to stitch. We don't have anything to stitch.
No, yeah. Well, that's what started this is, you know, you and I were talking and we were just bored out of our minds with nothing to do. So,
that's right. Nothing to do.
Yeah.
Might as well start at painting a canvas.
Yep. So that's what we're doing. And that ends the painted canvas segment of this week's show. Yes.
Yes.
So a little update on my studio. I'm sure at some point people are really tired of hearing about my studio, but I'm really proud of it, and it's really coming together well. So what I did was I had my original stitching table was like a 5-foot-long appendage to a bookcase that I got from IKEA. That clamped on there. I mean, it was designed to be a single unit. So on the left side were the bookcases that people have seen in the live shows, cubbies kind of thing, and then a table attached to it. Well, that table got warped over time because it was basically just really stiff cardboard and laminate. So it got a nice little bend to it, and I didn't like it. And I could tell that the more it got used, the more it was just going to pretty much just collapse one day. So I got rid of that, and I had purchased the 7-foot Husky table workbench from Home Depot. And I know it seems silly to be doing needlework on a Home Depot workbench, but that's what I'm doing. And I'll tell you, the 7-foot table, Kim Young suggested it. What a fantastic piece of equipment, because it will last me forever. And it was, I don't know, it was $350, something like that. But it will absolutely last forever. It is built like a tank. I mean, it's built for workbenches in shops and stuff. And so to me, good investment, because 5 years from now, cost over that number of years, who cares?
Right. And you have something, and you have what you want. You have right. what you want, and what and you and you'll be able to use it.
Right.
You know, just something that not useful, that just kind of fits the bill for a little bit. Yeah.
Right.
You're going to be frustrated.
So the original table that was warped, I was going to replace it with another Husky table, 52-inch table, and do that. And then have the 7-foot table as the one that I can roll around to use when I want extra space. So that seemed like a good idea at the time. Then I got the shorter 52-inch table, and I built that up, and I put it in the space of the in the place of the warped one. And the, I'd given up quite a bit of space, width and depth. And then I thought, wait a minute, I'm doing this wrong. So then I moved the 7-foot table in to my, as my main work table, because why not have 7 foot of working
right.
space? You know, dumb. so I put that in. And what that gave me is more than enough room for stitching. And then also my objective in all of this was to be able to set up podcast stuff and not have to tear it down all the time. So that gave me a good 3 feet on the end for laptop, microphone, workspace, keyboard, mouse, all that stuff. So that worked out perfect. And now the shorter table is the one I'm going to roll around. And of course, that's a lot easier to roll around. So that worked out perfect. And I'm really pleased with that. And I still have plenty of room. And then, go ahead.
Okay, so the smaller one, same quality, just smaller.
Same table, smaller. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
On wheel, and they're all on wheels, and they all have locks on the wheels, so you can lock them down so they don't roll all over. But they're so heavy, they ain't going anywhere. yeah. So I got that set up, and that's worked out. That was a good move. And then, so I have my TV, which I'm very happy with. And then I have my three-drawer dresser kind of thing, where I have all the linen and canvases stored. So they're out of the way. Won't get dirty, won't get sun on them, none of that. So that's good. And then I bought a bookcase, and that's going in the closet, and that's where all my books are going. And again, this is going to seem crazy, and I can't think of the name of it right now, but I got an unfinished bookcase, all-wood bookcase from Home Depot. And I'll come up with the name. I can't remember. And I looked on the instruction sheet, and it didn't have it on there. But it's unfinished because I could get it for $134, a 3-shelf, solid wood, not pressed wood, not, you know, laminated, nothing. Solid rock wood, heavy, which is what you want for a bookcase. So over time, those shelves don't warp. And so for $134, I got it unfinished because it's going in a closet, and I'm not finishing it, and I don't care. But like it was $200 or something for finished ones. Gorgeous piece, really heavy duty, really well built. So that's going to go in the closet. So all my books will be in a closet, with threads and other things. And so I've been able to keep the room open and spacious with lots of rolling around room. And it's worked out really well. So I'm happy.
Jealous. Just jealous.
I know what you mean, because I would be jealous too, quite frankly, because I mean it just is really turned out to be exactly what I had hoped it would be,
right.
And I'm just really happy with it and the way it's turned out, and really proud of it. And got a guy coming to put a light in the ceiling so I can actually have light from the top in the room. But it's really working out well. I'm really happy with it. So
do you have? That's the other thing. So there's light in the daytime because you put those
right. Sheets
up. It was too bright. But so what are you doing for light in the evenings? You have do you have a different lamp?
Well, I have a gooseneck fluorescent lamp that I've always used on the table. And then I have a lamp. But the guy is coming to put in the center of the ceiling a ceiling fan and light. And then I think I'm going to put track lighting over the table.
Okay.
So that I can angle the lighting and add, because I want to have plenty of light, especially in the evening, which is most of the time when I'm going to be in here stitching.
Right.
So, Because, yeah, I have two windows, two west-facing windows, which are really great for light. But now in the summer in St. Louis, man, it gets warm up here. Ooh. Even with the blinds closed and the light shutting off drapes over it closed, it still gets awful warm. So it's on the top floor, so the air conditioner gets up here kind of, sort of, pretty good. And I asked the HVAC guy, I said, hey, what can we do about getting cooler air up, more cool air upstairs? He says, about $5,000 for a mini split system, and then it'll be perfect. Okay, no.
Yeah, no, no.
Fans.
Right, no.
Fans, yeah. So so that's the only drawback. But, you know, for 3 months of the year, and then the rest of the time, I should be fine. So, right. Yeah, so I'm sure people are really tired of hearing about it, but I'm really pleased with it. And
we're just all jealous. Jealous, that's it.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, yeah, I like to talk about it because I'm really happy about it. So that's the update. I'll try to talk about it.
And he'll even be more excited when he can actually sit down and stitch. That's going to be.
Yes. I have to say, I'm now at that point where, all right, enough of this preparatory work. Let's do some stitching. Yes. So.
Stitch. Yes.
Yep. So there we go. That's the update on that. And I'll do a little video when it's all set up and fixed up the way it's supposed to be so people can see it. But for now, yeah, I'll talk less about it now.
He's just going to, won't tease us with it anymore.
That's right.
That's the deal.
Now we have this list of things that we're going to talk about. And mm-hmm. every week, and here we are at 37 minutes, and every week we don't get to the things.
No.
And
we always get distracted.
Yes. But the EGA has this monthly lecture.
Yes.
They're outstanding, but they're limited in the number of people can participate, and so it's a lottery to get into it.
Right.
And I was able to do the first couple, and then I have not won the lottery for the last couple. But you got to hear Diane Herman.
She was excellent.
Yes, she is. Anybody, and I will just say, I've had a class with Diane Herman, did one show with Diane Herman. You can look that up. Yeah, if you get a chance to spend an hour or two with Diane Herman, jump on it because you will not regret it. The woman is amazing. So tell me, I've been for 2 weeks now wanting to know about this presentation that she did.
So she went to Guatemala and with her church, I believe. And then she split off, and I cannot remember the group she met with, but they went and interacted with the weavers in Guatemala. And they have something called, I want to say they called cupolas, but they're clothing the women make, and they are heavily embellished with embroidery, with a specific type of embroidery. So when she went, she taught them some embroidery stitches. And that was the best part of the lecture to me, because she said, it's like when we have a class, there was a language barrier. And so she had somebody interpreting. So she would say something in English, and then this person would interpret it into Spanish. And then someone else, I think, would interpret it. And I might be wrong. There might have only been two interpreters, but it's still, you lose something when you interpret. And finally she said, enough. So she sat down with her hoop. She gathered the students around her. She did the stitch, and they watched her do the stitch. And then they went, and they sat down, and then they did the stitch. Uh-huh. I thought that was great.
Universal language. Yep.
Yes. And but she made an interesting comment that she said she didn't like people culturally appropriating items, like taking an old quilt and making it into a project bag was her example. And so people would take, she doesn't like it if people take like the clothing that these indigenous people made, that they actually, the old clothing, they'll sell at flea markets and people will buy them. But she's like, she wants them to preserve it as a shirt. And I'm like, well, then it's not useful. It's just almost a rag, you know, it's yeah. nothing. And eventually it'll get thrown away. I think it's very useful to take things like that and make it into something else that is useful, something that you're going to use and enjoy. Maybe if it's personal to you, like it's your grandmother's quilt and you want to preserve that for your following generation, that's one thing. But if someone sets something in goodwill and you don't know anything about them, I guess I don't see anything wrong with using that for something else. Now, does that bother you?
Well, and that's why I've been wanting to talk about this, because I think it's interesting, because if you'll remember, when we did the last tour in Australia, Margaret right. Lee, one of the questions that somebody in the audience asked was about Aboriginal art. And it was like a hard stop for her. No, we don't do that. And was it Margaret? I think it was Margaret or somebody else. But anyway, it was a hard stop. No, we do not take their art and copy it or use it in any way. Because, you know, out of respect for them is what I took out of it. And mm-hmm. so when you brought this up, I thought, well, are we talking about the same thing? And then, yeah, I'm struggling with the same thing that you struggle with. Because if you look at quilts, like the quilts my grandma made,
mm-hmm.
those quilts, and we have several of them, those were old shirts, old dresses that were worn right. out. And she took the good fabric, the useful fabric, and made it into a quilt. And so you have a useful item in a quilt to keep you warm, but you also have the memories of those different pieces of clothing that were worn right. so many times, because that was back in the day when you didn't just throw it out if it got a nick in it. you know what I mean? I mean, that's...
Right.
You kept stuff till it was literally worn out. And so right. then you had the memories of those pieces in the quilt. And for me, when I use one of my grandma's quilts, I remember still some of the pieces of clothing. And right. you know, so there's an extra dimension to it. So I, you know, so when you wrote that Diane had said that, it was really had me of two minds, because I don't know how to approach that.
Well, okay. And we just were at a friend's home, and she has on her walls a lot of those stamped cross stitches,
mm-hmm.
you know, the things that were stamped on. And she's collected tons of them. So I asked her about them. I said, where did you get these? I said, are they your family? She goes, no, a couple of them, you know, are family, but most of them I've collected. She said, I'd find them in thrift stores for a quarter and I dress them, and she's framed them. They are beautifully displayed. They're 1930s, 1920s. They're older, and she's got them beautifully displayed. But the problem is she has one daughter, and the daughter doesn't want them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she didn't make them. And they're not really related to her. So then what happens? They're going to end up probably back in Goodwill or at an auction and something. I mean, so then what? Then what do you do with them?
Yeah.
And eventually you have to decide, what are you going to do with all this stuff that you have? If it's something very precious to you, something that you really want to keep, like I have, of all things, I have pantaloons from my husband's great grandmother. Okay. That mm-hmm. they are still intact. They're those pantaloons they used to wear. And I've got those because I was the only one in the family that did any needlework, and I could appreciate them. And yeah. I think, well, how can I preserve those? Because those, to me, there's a story behind them. And I should get the story written down and put it in a memory box or something, so that, you know, maybe one of my kids might want it. Or if they don't want it, there's the story behind it. It has that knowledge behind it. So maybe someone would find it interesting over time.
Yeah.
But eventually I go to estate sales. I pick up old linens that literally are going to be dumped in a dumpster if they're not sold. And I take them and we dye them and we do altered art with them, or I put them in things, or I use them for backing for things. If the fabric's still good, is that bad? I'd rather that happen to them. And some of them are stitched. Some of them are hand stitched, where they've done drawn work or something on them. But if not, they're going to be thrown away.
Yeah.
No one's keeping them. So I'd much rather them be used than in a landfill. And that's my thought on it.
And it's a tough thing because museums can only hold so many pieces from indigenous people.
Right.
And then, then at some point it just goes to trash because young people today don't want to keep any of this stuff.
No,
They don't want
no,
any of it. And
no.
I mean, our daughter is quite clear that when we move on, the stuff in the china cabinet, and I'm sure all my needlework stuff, it's gone. She didn't care. She doesn't want it.
Right,
But how do you pres you know, it's history. How do you preserve that? And you look at samplers, reproduction samplers. I mean, they're preserving history.
So, and I think though, if you have something, I have my mom has framed several things that my great aunts stitched. They're beautiful. She's got them framed. My name is on them. Because I know that I will preserve them. None of my other siblings will want them. Although they knew my great aunts, that it doesn't matter to them. But eventually, I will need to find someone to give that to, and try to put a little bit of history and story behind it because that's what makes it worthwhile. It's not the piece of linen itself that's important, the piece of stitching. It's the story of the life behind it that makes it interesting. You know, the story that my great aunts made altar cloths out of cotton feed sacks because that's all they had, and they made beautiful items out of what they had to decorate a church altar, and that was all they had to offer, and that's all that was available. It was a pure, poor farming community, and they put their time and their effort. Those things That's the story you want. That's what you want to know. That's what makes it historical.
Yeah,
But if.
and burlap sack is immaterial. That love, effort, wanting to serve, and that's what you preserve when you keep those things. The materials, yeah, like you said, I mean nothing. It's
Right.
what's
It's
behind them, yeah.
the story behind them. And I think that's what we need. You know, if you have something that you know the story behind it, then you should make sure you write the story that goes with it and try to keep them together somehow. Because if not, you know, no one's going to want them. Historians, no one. But I also think that, you know, if you can take something and keep it out of a landfill, you make a project bag, you repurpose it into something else. At least it's being used and not being thrown away. And it gives you that memory and it gives it a second life.
Yeah. So what is it about things like Diane Herman was talking about and whoever it was in Sydney with indigenous people where you don't copy the art, or is it you don't use their cast-offs for something else, or both?
I think they would say both. But if they, I think if you, if I went to Guatemala and I found someone selling one of those shirts and it was stitched, and I could give them money so that they could use it for other things, and I went and made something so I had a memory of my time in Guatemala, I don't think that's a bad thing because they are selling it. They are getting rid of it. They can't keep it anymore. They're not using it. I don't think that's wrong. And here in the United States, we do copy indigenous people's designs, the Navajo designs, in both the jewelry and rugs, and there was a huge outcry about that when people were copying the Navajo jewelry
Well,
and selling it.
the painted canvas you're gonna do. I mean, that's
Right.
all indigenous art.
Right. It looks very much like some of the petroglyphs. But I don't think that's wrong. It kind of honors them, and it makes you, I think it makes people curious about more about their culture and wanting to know more about them. So listening to the lecture, I actually there's they send you out notes after the lecture about what the lecture is about. And she had some books that I thought, I've got to look those up. I'm really, really curious about these people and the stitching and, you know, the weaving they did. it made me more curious about them.
Yeah.
And made me want to know more about them as a culture and a people group.
Yeah. I don't know what the answer is there, because it exactly, yeah, you put that art, you put those color schemes, shapes, whatever they are, out there, and you learn from them. And when you take Margaret Lee, all that stuff she presented, all her artwork, every bit of it had a history and a story behind it, had symbolism and meaning. And
right.
to me, to preserve that is important, out of respect for history and ancestors and people of different cultures. I mean, we can't just throw these things away and throw history away. We have to preserve it, to remember it, to appreciate it.
Right, right. And we want to preserve, and it gives you a cure. To me, it makes me more curious about other people and other lands and other, how they do things. And can I learn from them? What can I learn from how they do their art that I can interpret it into what I do, into my art?
Right. Well, and you know, when you go down that path, isn't that what needlework is all about?
Right.
I mean, isn't that needlework at its very core is people learning from others and doing interpretations and adjustments and changes all around the globe?
Right. And I think that's what made that lecture so interesting when she said because, you know, if you've taught anybody else how to do needlework, the best way is you have them next to you. You say, go up with your needle here. You go down with your needle there.
Mm-hmm.
I was taught to do drawn thread work by my aunts who did not speak English, who only spoke Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a rudimentary amount of English, and I had a rudimentary amount of Spanish. And so it was fun, and I learned how to do it from them, and just basic. But, you know, it brought us together. I have this huge memory of that time of sitting and us laughing and them saying, no, you're doing it wrong. And I knew that's what they were saying. And,
yeah.
You know, it was, but I have that memory, and I love that memory.
And all of it happened without language. There was no barrier in the needlework. Yeah.
No, none.
Yeah.
None. So, and then that makes me think about the stitch for the Royal School of Needlework, that they're doing that, what are they doing?
The database, the stitching database.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. And that's going across cultures. I think they're trying to get as many different types of stitches from all across the world that they can get.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And that, you know, there's the universal language all in one spot.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, up at one, down at two is the same as if you know where the needle is going.
Yep. Yep. Because see, to me, stitches is no different than music.
Right.
Because you don't need language to play music.
No.
And you don't need language to do needlework. You could go anywhere in the world with your little hoop and your little linen and sit down with somebody who does needlework, and you guys are in concert.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's
right.
One of the cool things. Yep.
Right.
And then and then that's when the exchanges start. Well, how about this? How about that? And you still don't need language.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So it's interesting. It's just interesting. Because I think I'm with you. I think we're on the same page here. To me, to replicate or to use what indigenous people or historical things are have been cast off or whatever, to revive it, to keep it alive, is an important role that we can play.
Right, right. And that's what we want to do. We don't want this art form that we love to die off.
No.
We want people to take it and maybe they'll reinterpret it a little bit in next generation, but we want them to still be carrying on with what we're doing, with what we love.
I mean, take Bristol samplers, just Bristol samplers. Now, if you spend more than 10 minutes reading anything about Bristol samplers, you will go down that very deep rabbit hole of learning about the Bristol School and the history behind it and what was done for all those orphans and how that all came to be. And it's a tremendous story that that people need to know about. And it all comes out of thread.
Right. Right.
And we can replicate it. And there are charts that allow us to experience what those kids did.
Right. Right. Or any of the samplers that are out there, that they're, when you first look at them, you think, oh, these all look the same. But then all of a sudden you say, no, wait a second. There's groupings. There's, you know, these people always did their alphabet this way and they always left off this letter, or, which to me is fascinating, because then you're like, okay, so why? Why did they always do the letters that way?
Yep.
Why is it different in this country than that country? It just makes it much more interesting. And then you learn more about people, you learn more about the world around you. Which is what I find that fascinating.
Yeah. Well, what, that's the first I ran into, was it letter J? It didn't used to have the letter J.
Right.
And so you'd see alphabets and older samplers where there's no J, and you wonder, well, why would they leave that out? Because it didn't exist. And then you go, well, why is that? And so then you're immediately learning some history. And, that's the beauty of it. Yeah. That's what's so cool about samplers in general, is the history. The designs are interesting, and the history and how they derive and how they move around the world and all that's interesting, but it's the history. These little kids, these orphans, these girls that was their means of finding a better life. And to be able to experience that with your own hands is, I think, fun. It's fun and educational.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. And it'd be interesting to talk with Diane about that more.
Right. It would be.
Yeah. Well, I know how to get a hold of her, so maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. Yep.
Maybe. That'll be good.
We'll see. All right. That's one of the topics. We got one of the topics on the list.
Oh, good.
So that's progress from the last time.
Yes.
Where we got
none.
We
still have a few more.
Yes. All right. We're going to call it there. Join us tonight. Carrie Noss will be with us to get us prepped for Needle Ace for the next week presentation with Needle Ace. And Beth and I will be chatting. And hopefully I'll be stitching. It should be exciting.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And Sunday is Ectocall and maps and embroidery and all the things that go with that. Thanks for listening.
All right. Take care.